This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. Britain's Conservative Party is now looking for a new leader. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
This morning I met the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady. We've agreed that there will be a leadership election to be completed within the next week.
Truss quid after a meeting with Graham Brady, a senior Conservative lawmaker who oversees leadership challenges. Brady was tasked with assessing whether the Prime Minister still has the support of Tory members of Parliament, and it seemed she did not. Conservative lawmaker Miriam Cates says it's time for the Prime Minister to go. She isn't up to the job, sadly. Lawmakers' anger grew after a Wednesday evening vote over fracking for shale gas, a practice that Truss wants to resume despite opposition from many Conservatives. The debate produced chaotic scenes in Parliament. Charles de la Desma, London.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday called British Prime Minister Truss, later telling reporters she was a good partner in supporting Ukraine to defend itself against Russian aggression. Biden declined to weigh in on her resignation. The president did add that the British are going to solve their problem. Biden dismissed any potential spillover effects from the political turmoil of the United States' oldest ally. Truss stepped down after her unfunded tax-cutting agenda crashed the British pound, raising borrowing costs and triggered financial market turmoil. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also, on the VOA mobile app, via remote. This is VOA News. The U.S. military says it has proof that the Iranian forces are on the ground in Crimea, supporting the Russian military attacks against Ukrainian targets. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Pentagon Press Secretary Pat Ryder says they have evidence Iranian forces were involved in the drone attacks on Ukraine's power stations and other key infrastructure.
We continue to see Iran be complicit in terms of exporting terror, not only in the Middle East region, but now also to Ukraine.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the Russian military would need Iran's help with the drones, which he says were made in Iran.
It follows that they would need a little training on how to pilot these things.
Tehran continues to deny that its forces have been in Crimea supporting Russian drone attacks, to which the Pentagon responds.
It's obvious that they're lying.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Ukraine is restricting power use Thursday in response to Russian attacks that damaged parts of the country's electrical infrastructure. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged people to conserve energy. In an address on late Wednesday, he said the government was working to create mobile power supply points for critical infrastructure in cities and villages. Ukraine's power grid operators said supply restrictions would be in place from 7 a.m. until 11 p.m., and that as the colder months approach, it may need to take such steps again in the future. A panel of virus vaccine experts has voted to add COVID shots to recommended vaccinations, that is. AP correspondent Norman Hall has that story.
A panel of vaccine experts says COVID-19 shots should be added to the list of recommended vaccinations for kids and adults. Panel's unanimous decision has no immediate effect. COVID-19 shots are already recommended for virtually all Americans. Rather, it would put the shots on the annually updated formal list of what vaccinations doctors should be routinely offering to their patients, alongside shots for polio, measles, and hepatitis. The expert panel's decisions are almost always adopted by the CDC director and then sent to doctors as part of the government's advice on how to prevent disease. I'm Norman Hall.
The Dominican Republic has approved a request by a trading firm to export more than 20,000 gallons of diesel to Haiti for use principally in hospitals, according to letters seen by Reuters, as gangs continue blocking a key fuel terminal in Haiti. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, October 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, President Joe Biden expresses concern for aid to Ukraine if Republicans win control of Congress as power outage hits Kyiv.
Basically, how it works is that every city has its own schedule. Normally, it's a four-hour outage, which means that there is no power supply to the apartment building.
The search begins for a new British Prime Minister following the resignation of Liz Truss.
There are no options open to her. She goes back to the back benches, and I'd be very surprised if she was in the next government. Conservative Party have got to figure out and tell us, presumably today, what the rules are for the next competition.
And the African Union sets an October date for peace talks to end the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. President Joe Biden expressed concern on Thursday about the prospects for future U.S. assistance to Ukraine if Republicans win control of one or both houses of the U.S. Congress in November 8th elections. Biden was in Pittsburgh campaigning for Democrat John Fetterman, whose U.S. Senate race against Republican Mehmet Oz will help determine whether Democrats maintain control of the Senate. In recent days, the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, said he would be, quote, unwilling to write a blank check, unquote, for Ukraine aid if Republicans take control of the House of Representatives from Democrats in the midterm election. Ukraine is restricting power use Thursday in response to Russia's attacks that damaged parts of the country's electrical infrastructure. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged people to conserve energy in an address late Wednesday. Anna Chanikova in Kyiv updates Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller after experiencing the restrictions herself.
Today is the first day that Ukraine has this scheduled power outages across the country. Basically, how it works is that every city has its own schedule. Normally, it's a four-hour outage, which means that there is no power supply to the apartment buildings, to the houses, and there is no street lighting and this kind of stuff. However, it is a very targeted outage, so it's not a blackout. There is no electricity, but for instance, emergency institutions like hospitals, they are still having electricity, or emergency stuff like elevators or water pumping stations, they are also working. So while it is no electricity, Ukrainians still have water. This is done in order to help energy system to recover and to stabilize after this recent attack that happened in this past couple of weeks. Some other regions, situation varies. So some regions that suffered more with the attack, where the infrastructure was damaged more, they have longer outages and water supply issues. But still, in general, government announced this scheduled power outages in order to stabilize the system in whole. So, for instance, when Kyiv citizens don't have electricity, this means that other regions of Ukraine and outskirts of Kyiv can have more stable electricity supply. And this is basically how it's going to work for this next weeks. We don't have exact information for the moment for how long will it take, but at least for now we have the schedule for the next week.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine Steve Miller from Kyiv. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has signed up to Russian President Vladimir Putin's plan to turn Turkey into a Russian gas hub. The project, as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, comes as Ankara faces growing scrutiny from Western allies over its refusal to enforce Russian sanctions.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, addressing his parliamentary deputies on Wednesday, said Turkey secured a vital opportunity by agreeing to Russian President Vladimir Putin's plan to form a natural gas hub in Turkey. Erdogan said, European countries are currently searching to find where to get natural gas supplies. Thank God Turkey does not have such a problem. Hopefully we will soon become a hub for natural gas. Last week, Putin said the gas would be redirected through Turkey from the Nord Stream pipelines under the Black Sea, which were damaged by blasts last month. Russia already supplies Turkey's TurkStream gas pipeline under the Black Sea, but the Kremlin admitted the pipeline has limited extra capacity. By the time new capacity has been created, said international relations professor Senem Aydın Düzgit of Istanbul Sabancı University, Europe will likely have secured alternative supplies.
I mean, who's going to buy that energy? I mean, realistically speaking, if the Europeans refuse to buy that gas, who's going to buy it? So who will Turkey be a center for, right? Who will be the destination of that gas? That's what I'm just not convinced about.
Putin's hub proposal comes as Ankara is seeking to position itself as an alternative to Russian energy for Europe, as Turkish presidential spokesman İbrahim Kalın underlined Wednesday. Kalın said the offer by Putin is very important, but if Europe is looking for alternatives from natural gas, there are two places it can find it, through a pipeline from Azerbaijan running through Turkey and possible Iranian gas in the future, again using Turkish pipelines. Putin appeared to take Ankara by surprise with his gas hub plan. The proposal comes as Turkey is facing growing scrutiny from its Western allies over its refusal to enforce sanctions against Russia. Washington and the European Union have warned Turkey could face secondary sanctions if it violated its measures against Russia. Ankara denies any wrongdoing. But Putin's gas proposals come as the West's patience may be running out, warns Maria Shangina, a specialist on international sanctions at the International Institute for Strategic Studies.
The more Turkey exploits this space between legal and illegal activities with Russia, I think that there might be a snapping point from the West to impose sanctions.
But some analysts point out that Erdogan will try to accommodate Putin, given that he's trying to negotiate a cut in price of Russian gas and a deferral of payments until after next year's Turkish presidential elections. Erdogan is seeking to cut near triple-digit inflation, as most opinion polls indicate his electoral defeat. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
And senior members of Britain's ruling Conservative Party laid out the rules of the contest to succeed Liz Truss as the UK's Prime Minister on Thursday. The party's chairman, Sir Jack Berry, said the new leader will be choosing an, unquote, expedited binding online vote, unquote, of party members if more than two candidates are put forward by the parliamentary party. Truss became the third Conservative Prime Minister to be toppled in as many years. For more, I spoke with Anand Menon, Professor of European Politics and Foreign Affairs at King's College London. She is also the director of the UK in a Changing Europe initiative.
They must have compellingly made the case to her that she has no choice but to go.
So what are the options open to the Conservative Party and the former Prime Minister Truss?
Well, there are no options open to her. She goes back to the back benches, and I'd be very surprised if she was in the next government. Conservative Party have got to figure out and tell us, presumably today, what the rules are for the next competition and take it from there.
And what about possible, probable candidates?
We're going to have to wait. Tom Tugendhat apparently has said he's not going to run. We'll just have to see. I think the choice of candidates is going to hinge on the method. If the members aren't involved, then I suspect the right of the party has got less chance of winning. So if choice of candidate is going to hinge on what the process is for selecting them.
Any possibility of the return of any former prime minister?
Very unlikely, as I said, at this moment.
And what kind of confidence do you think the Conservative Party now has going forward?
What you never know is how much the party is blamed for the failings of Liz Truss, whether a new leader can wipe out some of the bad poll ratings they have at the moment. We just don't know yet. We're going to have to see over time when we get a new leader in. We usually think there's going to be a poll bounce for a new leader. I think that's probably unlikely for this one because of the economic conditions they're inheriting. But we're just going to have to wait and see. I don't know, I'm afraid.
Looks like things are looking up for Labour Party.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
That's Anand Menon, Professor of European Politics and Foreign Affairs at King's College London, and is also the director of the UK in a Changing Europe initiative. He spoke with me from London. Israelis returned to the polls November 1st, the fifth time since 2019. Polls show that former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is close to returning to power and forming a narrow coalition with right-wing and ultra-Orthodox parties. One of his likely partners is a far-right party headed by extremist Itamar Ben-Gvir. Linda Granstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Tensions between Israelis and Palestinians in Jerusalem have been running high for weeks as Israeli police battled Arab stone throwers recently in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Right-wing extremist politician Itamar Ben-Gvir showed up and drew his pistol. He tweeted that Jewish blood matters and that police should not be constrained by the government from shooting Arab terrorists. Ben-Gvir's Jewish Power Party is running in the November 1st Israeli elections, together with two other far-right parties, in a joint slate called Religious Zionism. If polls are correct, religious Zionism is on track to become Israel's third largest party. Many analysts see Ben-Gvir as a potential kingmaker who could enable former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to return to power and form a right-wing religious coalition, with Ben-Gvir as a cabinet minister.
I want Bibi to be the prime minister, and I want to be in that government. I want to pull the government to the right, a true right, one that loves people, children, and women, a right that defends the weak who are attacked.
Ben-Gvir is a disciple of the late Mayor Kahana, who believed in transfer, or forcing Arab citizens out of Israel. Kahana's Kach party was outlawed in Israel and the U.S. as a terrorist organization, and Ben-Gvir himself was convicted of racist incitement. But he says he has moderated his views.
The strong left had done great on branding him as an extremist, but in most cases, this is just fake news. If you take a look, close look at his interviews, at this campaign, he doesn't say anything about transfer, about Kahana's views, or any other views that hard lefters are trying to brand him under.
Several U.S. politicians and American Jewish leaders warn that Ben-Gvir as an Israeli government minister will cause tensions with the U.S. administration and American Jews.
The core strength of the U.S.-Israel alliance is our shared democratic values, the values enshrined in our respective declarations of independence. And the notion of an extremist like Ben-Gvir essentially representing a senior face of the Israeli government would severely undermine that.
Ben-Gvir's growing popularity seems part of a worldwide trend of ultranationalists gaining power.
I think the answer about what happened in Israel and in Europe is the national mood, the need of the population to be separate from other groups, immigrants in Europe or in Israel, the Arab population.
Some election observers say that electing Ben-Gvir means the end of Israeli democracy. Others contend that Israel is still a strong democracy as it prepares for the fifth election in under 4 years. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Thank you, Linda. The African Union has set October 24th as a date for peace talks to end the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region, according to the National Security Advisor for Ethiopia's Prime Minister. The talks, set to take place in South Africa, would be aimed at ending the two-year war that has killed hundreds of thousands of people. Fred Hartau reports from Addis Ababa.
The announcement from Ethiopian National Security Advisor Redwan Hussein came days after the federal government announced the capture of three strategic towns in Tigray, including Shire, which hosts large numbers of people uprooted by the war. In recent days, diplomats have urged the federal government and the Tigray forces to agree to an immediate ceasefire, with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warning Monday that the situation in northern Ethiopia is spiraling out of control. African Union-led peace talks were supposed to take place earlier this month in South Africa, with both the Tigray rebels and the federal government saying they were ready to participate. The talks were delayed due to logistical issues. Redwan said on Twitter Thursday that the federal government has reconfirmed our commitment to participate in talks mediated by the AU. However, we are dismayed that some are bent on preempting the peace talks and spreading false allegations against the defensive measures, he added, an indirect reference to recent statements from Western officials expressing alarm over reports of attacks on civilians. The federal government said this week that it is planning to take control of Tigray's airports and federal institutions in order to safeguard the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said Monday that the EU deplores the escalation of violence and irreparable cost to human life in Ethiopia, and warned the parties to begin peace talks without delay. A recent UN report found that all sides have committed human rights abuses since the conflict broke out in November 2020. Samantha Power, who heads the US Agency for International Development, warned Sunday that there is a significant risk of further assaults and killings being perpetrated against civilians if the fighting engulfs camps for displaced people in Tigray. The Tigray rebels did not immediately confirm their participation in the talks in South Africa on October 24, but have previously committed to participating in a peace process overseen by the AU. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. The World Health Organization warns Africa COVID's vaccination coverage has stagnated, putting the continent's 1.2 billion people at higher risk for this ever-evolving virus. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
New numbers from the WHO show a significant decline in new vaccinations, with immunization rates dropping by more than half between July and September. At this rate, WHO officials say most countries in Africa will miss the global goal of vaccinating 70% of their populations by the end of the year. Despite this setback, WHO says modest progress is being made towards vaccinating high-risk population groups, particularly the elderly. In other good news, the agency reports over the past 12 weeks, Africa has recorded the lowest case numbers since the start of the pandemic, adding that deaths remain low across the region. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says in many ways, Africa is a victim of its own success.
It's important to note that vaccine supply is no longer problematic. Countries are now receiving about double the number of doses per 100 people than at the end of last year. Unfortunately, as vaccines have helped avert serious COVID-19 illness, hospitalization, and death, people are less fearful. And so also less willing to get vaccinated.
Several African countries have defied the statistics and racked up vaccination successes. WHO reports Liberia now has joined Mauritius and Seychelles in reaching more than 70% coverage, and Rwanda is on target to join them soon. Liberia's health minister, Wilhelmina Jala, explains how her country has achieved this milestone.
The magic bullet was decentralization, making sure each county run their own vaccination campaign and the participation of all the healthcare workers and the vaccinators and the support from all of the partners and making sure that the vaccines were available. That's key to success.
Aurelia Nguyen is special advisor to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. She says Gavi so far has supplied 670 million doses to Africa. She says vaccines will continue to be sent to Africa for as long as the pandemic continues and poses a threat. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Canberra scientists are researching a mysterious new recreational drug not seen before in Australia. The Australian National University says the substance is a, quote, close cousin, unquote, of ketamine, a controlled anesthetic used by doctors and veterinarians. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
The new substance is known as CanKet, a Canberra ketamine. It was discovered at Australia's first government-supported pill testing centre that started as a trial in the national capital earlier this year. The research team says the new drug was handed in at Australia's first pill checking centre in Canberra. The user thought it was ketamine, but said its effects were unusual and wanted it checked by experts at the pill monitoring service. The drug was presented in a small plastic bag of crystals and powder. Australian National University scientists believe the new drug was probably imported from overseas. It's not known whether CanKet has side effects. It is chemically similar to ketamine, but has characteristics that haven't been seen previously. Associate Professor Malcolm McLeod is with the Australian National University Research School of Chemistry. Illicit drugs.
It's a controlled medicine, so difficult to get your hands on typically, much more difficult than typical prescription medicines, so it's in that category. You know, it does seem to be, in our drug checking service, we routinely see ketamine presented, so it does seem to be a recreational drug in the Australian scene at the moment. What's more, it seems to be being substituted for other things, including this new ketamine derivative.
Ketamine is used in medicine and as a horse tranquilizer. It's also a popular recreational drug linked to a phenomenon known as the K-hole, a type of out-of-body experience. Common side effects include nightmares, hallucinations, high blood pressure, and confusion. It's typically injected, snorted, or taken orally. In 2019, an estimated 9 million Australians, or more than 40% of the population aged over 14, had illicitly used a drug, according to the National Drug Strategy Household Survey. The survey is a government-funded project that's been collecting data about alcohol, tobacco and drug consumption in Australia every 2 to 3 years since 1985. The most popular illicit drugs were cannabis and cocaine. The survey showed that ketamine use rose from 0.4% of respondents in 2016 to 0.9% in 2019. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs program Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States hosted the first ever U.S. Pacific Islands Country Summit to build on the commitment to the people of the Pacific. The Pacific Islands and the United States have long-standing trade and diplomatic relationships. In addition to protecting the security of the region, the United States is also committed to combating the dangers of climate change. At the summit, President Joe Biden stressed the importance of strengthening these partnerships.
We're seeing the consequences of climate change around the world very vividly, including in the United States right now. And I know your nations feel it acutely.
However, preparing for climate change is a complex challenge, noted Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Building resilience is about more than equipping communities to adapt to the effects of the climate crisis, which for many of you, is an existential threat. It's also about preparing communities to weather a wide range of interrelated shocks that we know have caused cascading effects.
To that end, President Biden has announced $810 million in expanded programs to improve the lives of Pacific Islanders. These investments include preparing for climate impacts on health and food security and building early warning capacity to predict, prepare for, and respond to climate hazards. Secretary Blinken also discussed plans to strengthen marine livelihoods by supporting fisheries, aquaculture, and tourism as part of the Resilient Blue Economies program. The blue economy refers to the sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods, and jobs while preserving the health of ocean ecosystems. The United States also joined Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom in the first Partners of the Blue Pacific Ministerial. Together, these countries met with members of the Pacific Islands Forum to discuss how to efficiently develop and bolster the Pacific Islands government and economies in line with PIF's 2050 strategy for the Blue Pacific continent. The United States is committed to deepening the relationship with the Pacific Island countries and helping them prepare for future climate hazards that threaten the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.